Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
Hey, you want that to go?
Getting takeout on the day before Thanksgiving? Sounds like a good idea, actually. The news never stops, though. Our first takeout comes from Louise Story, business reporter for The New York Times. You predicted this months ago. The FDIC, supposed to be protecting our money, guaranteeing our money, was running out of it. And now we know what the extent of the red ink is. What is it?
So for the first time since 1992, we're in the red. They have a balance of negative $8.2 billion. They just released their third quarter report yesterday. This is the FDIC. They're the ones that if a bank fails, they make sure that consumers get their money back up to a certain limit. That limit is $250,000 right now.
So they're overdrawn.
They're overdrawn. And to put it in context, just a year ago, the fund had a positive $34 billion. Now, because of all of the banks that have failed, we've had 124 banks fail this year. We're down to negative $8 billion.
Now, the way that the federal government is going to try to recoup this loss is to force banks to pay their insurance premiums up front. How much money does that represent?
So they're going to pull in $45 billion, which should cover what they expect they'll need if they're right. And they're going to pull that in from the banks by having them prepay what they would have paid through 2012. It's kind of ironic because if you think about it, a year ago, we had the government bailing out the banks, and now we have these
banks
lending money to the FDIC.
Quickly, does it hurt the banks to actually pony up this money for the FDIC? If any bank lost its FDIC coverage, it would fail, right?
Right. This is fine for the banks because of a certain accounting treatment allows them not to have to really count this money they're paying ahead in a way that hurts them. So the accounting treatment lets them off. The money will let the FDIC off. And hopefully the FDIC will let all these troubled banks fail smoothly so we won't lose our money.
It's an economic indicator, but we shouldn't be worried. The FDIC is overdrawn. Louise Story, business reporter for The New York Times. Thanks so much.
To the future that beckons all of us, let us answer its call and let our two great nations realize all the triumphs and achievements that await us. Cheers.
You're here. President Barack Obama serving up a healthy portion of platitudes at the first state dinner of his presidency last night in honor of the Indian Prime Minister Manmohan Singh. No meat on the menu. Green curry prawns, naan, pumpkin pie.
Yum.
The entertainment. Jennifer Hudson was the headliner. Others there. Not a bad dinner.
No.
So we hear.
In a big tent there at the White House.
Big tent. 400 people in there. Vishakha Desai was one of the lucky guests. She is president of the Asia Society. She joins us this morning on her way back home. Vishakha, good to have you with us. Thanks for being there. What was the highlight for you?
Well, I think everything from food to entertainment to just the level of people who were there, very unusual group of people from young activists to bold-faced names. Very exciting night.
All right. I assume this is your first state dinner?
No.
Oh.
This is my third state dinner.
Oh, nice.
This is old hat for you.
Nice.
Excellent. Well, I'm glad you enjoyed it. Now, what about, you know, I've heard this stuff about, you know, the menu selection. There's a lot of time obviously spent on this. And I've read that they try to steer clear of serving the cuisine of the country that is honored. And in this case, however, there was naan and there was green curried prawns. Did that go over well?
I think it went really, really well because the food was excellent. And I think the reason why it went so well is that it was very much a part of, I think, what this presidency is all about, which is to really be globally sensitive and aware, but also have a unique flavor that is very uniquely American. So that while there were some things that were touches, you wouldn't say it was an Indian meal by any stretch of the imagination. Similarly with music, with National Symphony Orchestra on the one hand, A.R. Rahman of Slumdog Millionaire on the other, and Jennifer Hudson, and a musician from Chicago, you really had a sense that this administration is very focused on making sure it's sensitive, but it's uniquely American.
And speaking of uniquely American, the reporting of this was kind of interesting. You know, it was breaking news on Michelle Obama's dinner attire, and she was strapless, as I understand it. What was your impression of how the First Lady looked?
She looked gorgeous. She looked absolutely dead gorgeous because I think that, first of all, she carries off these dresses so beautifully well. And the dress was made by a designer who really spent 3 weeks in India to get it all hand-stitched with the right kind of sequins. And yet he's an American designer based in America, Naim Khan. So again, it's that idea of an Indian-American nodding to India, but a properly Western dress, which I think was made in India, but for the American audience, for the American First Lady in an American style.
All right.
Which is very exciting.
Thank you very much, Vishakha Desai, our state dinner reporter here.
Atmospherics, symbolic, but also meaningful there.
She did a good job.
As she said, indeed.
Thank you.
So too much information at work. That was the takeout from you responding to contributor Beth Kobliner yesterday, who was talking all about the dangers of private info going public on the job.
The bottom line is nothing is private. You have to realize no matter what you tell your coworkers, your boss, it's going to get out there. Keep it positive and keep it on business.
Now, Jonathan emailed us to say this is an example of how modern workplaces and traditional privacy don't mix. He writes, "Why do we put up with our workplaces invading our privacy in the most intimate ways? What Beth said is probably true, but the implication is that employment is complete suppression of our personality, the inability to form human relations with coworkers, because to do so is to risk one's livelihood."
Work as a suppression of personality. Not in radio, though. No. Exactly. Barry gave us his own cautionary tale in his email. He wrote, "I worked at a large government office back in the 1980s when I happened to mention to a coworker that my family was active in the Jewish socialist labor movement. From that time, I became known as a communist, and it made life difficult for me, and ultimately, I believe, played a role in ending my career at that office." Well, you can tell us as much as you like. We won't brand you in any way or end your career. Call us at 877-8-MY-TAKE or email us at mytake@thetakeaway.org. Coming up, New York Senator Chuck Schumer joins us to talk about health care, and Khalid Sheikh Mohammed in a lower Manhattan courtroom.